Donnie Jackson, editor of IWC's Urgent Communications, and today I'm speaking with Kevin McGinnis. Kevin, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
My pleasure, Donnie.
So, Kevin, you've had a long history of working in the EMS world and being a member of the FirstNet board, now on the Public Safety Advisory Committee for FirstNet, and you've been a big proponent of EMS and talked about how EMS is going to be a big user of FirstNet and the potential for telehealth. Tell us, anything change on that front? Any updates on how that movement is happening?
Yeah, actually, Donnie, in a very big way, things are changing. We've sort of had this view of all the potential applications in EMS that might be enabled by FirstNet. And I've done presentations over the last dozen years of dozens of those potentials. And, you know, today it's a matter of FirstNet being introduced into areas and then folks sort of finding ways to use it. Well, there is a happening in EMS this year that was announced in February and is now being implemented that will definitely turn the tide and sort of fulfill the prediction that I have that EMS is going to become one of the biggest users of FirstNet. And that is telehealth, where we've sort of assumed that telehealth interactions between EMTs in the field, paramedics in the field, and physicians and other specialists would be a thing enabled by FirstNet. Now it's going to become a reality because of something that the federal government is doing, which strikes right at the heart of a revenue source for EMS, which is something that EMS struggles with because third-party payers, by and large, and the federal government through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, have never quite paid the full cost of what it costs to run an EMS service. One of the issues goes back sort of in our history. I've been in EMS for 45 years, so I've seen all of this. But early on, we were a horizontal taxi cab service up until the late 60s and early 70s, and basically did nothing but transport patients. From the early 70s to the present day, we went through a kind of EMS 2.0 where modern EMS grew up and we started to be able to intervene in medical emergencies and have a real impact on life-saving and patient improving through those interventions. And have become fairly sophisticated in the way that we bring emergency care to the field. And today we're going through yet another phase, which is sort of an EMS 3.0, where we are learning to apply EMS resources, EMTs and paramedics, to primary care in our communities when we're not out on emergencies, because quite frankly, a good portion of the 911 calls that we get are not real emergencies and don't really need to go to the emergency department. And so we try to do primary and preventive care in our communities to not have those 911 calls happen in the first place. But still, they do happen, and we still do transport patients to the emergency department for care that could be handled someplace else in a much less expensive and intensive environment, like an urgent care center, for instance. Well, because of that history, CMS, the federal third-party payer, and they are the ones that set the standard for all of the private insurers and Medicaid, has always treated us as just being a supplier of transportation. And in fact, for the most part, if we don't transport to the emergency department, we don't get paid. And so the incentives are kind of backwards in the modern healthcare system today for EMS, because the incentive is to take the patient to the most expensive place to get treated, regardless of what you have. Well, CMS has finally realized this, and this year announced a pilot program called Emergency Triage, Treat, and Transport, or ET3, which is a 5-year pilot program part of which is to create an incentive for the right patients not to be transported to the emergency department, and instead to transport the patient to an alternative destination, like an urgent care center, or a rural health clinic, or some other place where it's more appropriate care for the patient's condition, or if that's not available, to treat the patient in place and release them by either bringing a physician or a physician assistant or nurse practitioner or other healthcare practitioner to the scene to provide that care, or to have one of those practitioners guide EMTs and paramedics via telehealth to treat in place and then release the patient. It's kind of a quirk because, again, of our history where we were treated as suppliers of transportation. We've never been treated as medical care practitioners. That's something that has to be changed in the future, but for the time being, that's just the way it is.
Wow. So, so just so I'm clear, if you guys transported somebody, you would get paid the same whether you just transported them or whether you treated them and transported them before.
Well, it's varied over the years. We can charge, and over the years we can charge for procedures that we do or supplies that we use or what have you. And whether we got reimbursed for that or not was a changing picture.
Okay. Okay.
But if we did not transport to the emergency department, we got nothing.
Okay. All right. And then in terms of bringing the practitioner, you need to bring the practitioner either in person or virtually through telehealth. Is that basically the deal?
That will be the case under the ET3 pilot program, yes. So in essence, since we are not practitioners, that's exactly right. We are allowed to treat the patient and release them if we have a doctor by our side in the field, which in a lot of instances, particularly in rural areas, isn't going to happen, or if we can connect with those practitioners by telehealth, which can happen, and especially can happen with FirstNet in place.
That is a big deal. I would think that there are a lot of insurance companies that would say, "Hey, can you build it out there quicker? that coverage out there, and by the way, maybe we'll even pay you if you'll make it where we can do this instead of how long are these drives from some of these rural areas to an emergency room?"
My practice in 45 years is it's varied from no faster, because I practice primarily in Maine and rural upstate New York. I've never had less than a 20 minute to a half hour drive to the hospital. Oftentimes it's more like 45 minutes to an hour, depending on where you're going. And the problem is that in rural areas today, with hospitals closing, especially in southern and western states, that hour transport is turning into 2 hours because you have to go further away to find an open hospital.
Wow. Okay. Well, so you mentioned that this is a pilot. What would it take to make this permanent?
Well, clearly CMS wants to prove that there's money to be saved. They think that there's easily $500 million that could be saved by not taking patients to the emergency department and having them either go to an alternate destination or treat in place. So if they can bear out those numbers in this pilot program, then they'll make it a permanent deal. Hopefully it's not going to take them 5 years to prove that. Hopefully the data will quickly show that it does that. And we have every hope that it will. In fact, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield last year announced that it was going to start reimbursing EMS services for community paramedicine types of services, essentially what ET3 is doing, plus some other services that are preventive in nature. Because the green eyeshade folks at at Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield believe that they're going to save money by doing that. Well, we don't know if it was the green eyeshade folks at CMS that looked at Anthem and frankly, some others, United Healthcare and Aetna, all have had pilots around the country doing the same thing. It was just a matter of time. The big deal for us now is that though Anthem sort of went the right direction, seeing CMS go in this direction is certainly going to pull along the other third-party payers and hopefully Medicaid as well. And in fact, CMS is now trying to make sure that when they award a pilot program in this current pilot, that the folks, the AIMWELL service that's going to be doing it in a given area has gone to other payers in that area, including Medicaid, and have said, won't you play as well? So we're hoping this is going to have a really big impact in terms of how EMS gets paid. And certainly the demand for telehealth services, and I got to think mainly in rural, more rural areas, is going to be great.
Okay. All right. And if I'm an EMS provider, how can I be part of this pilot?
You have until September 19th to apply to become a pilot participant. And quite easily, if you simply Google ET3 and CMS, you'll get the homepage for that. And that will lead you to the application portal, and so on and so forth. There should be, we believe, in the next, during the 5 years of the pilot, there are going to be two more waves of opportunity to apply to be a part of the pilot, but there's no guarantee that that will happen. So, okay. If you're really interested, get in by September 19th.
All right. Very cool. And then just looking at a big picture, it seems like there are a lot of incentives here. I mean, I would think the insurance companies would love this. I would think the patients would think this is a whole bunch, it's going to take less time for them and they get the more appropriate treatment. I would think the hospitals don't really want people filling up their emergency room that aren't having an emergency problem. Is there anybody, and certainly the EMS providers, this seems like a better deal. Is there anyone in the ecosystem that doesn't benefit from this?
Well, all of this is, healthcare, as you know, is in transition, and we think we're going in the direction set by the ACA, and this is very much consistent with that. But as we transition, there are still a lot of healthcare being provided on a fee-for-service basis. Mm-hmm. So there are some emergency departments that see any reduction in their volume as taking away from their fees for service, at least in the short run. So there may be some resistance there, but by and large, that's not the case. And, you know, the other thing will be just educating the public that because you dial 911 and expect an ambulance to come does not necessarily mean you're going to end up in an emergency department. And so, you know, there may be some foiled expectations there. However, you know, I think people will come to learn that they may get better and faster and more appropriate and cheaper care if they accept what the system provides. Because as we know, virtually nobody pays 100% of an emergency visit to the emergency department. Everybody seems to get to share in the cost.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Kevin, this is great news, and congratulations on seeing, you know, this new advancement. And please keep in touch and let us know as the ET3 initiative progresses, okay?
You bet, Donnie. Thank you.